Hello, I'm Tim Soppomasane. This week on Mongrel Nation, asylum seekers.
The journey took us nearly a month and so eventful. Everybody on the boat was so desperate. We were preparing to die many times.
You know, to make a choice to migrate is an incredibly courageous decision. You're putting your life in the hands of a new country, but you're not only putting your own life, you're putting the lives of your children and your grandchildren.
The fact that the people come here by boat indicates they've got mobility. Mobility equals money. They make a conscious, strategic decision to come to Australia. The people that are most in need aren't the ones coming to our shores.
Back when I was in year seven, a taller girl walked past me and my friend, and she said, "Hughes, go back where you come from. Go back on the boat."
If you ask any Australian in the top 20 things come Monday morning that trouble you and concern you in the quality of your life, is an asylum seeker one of them? Is an asylum seeker the person that just nicked your job? Is an asylum seeker the person that just outbid you at the latest auction? Does the RBA decide the next boat's going to, you know, raise interest rates? It's not, is it?
So what is it about asylum seekers that causes so much controversy? Is it that there's so many of them? Is it that they arrive by boat? Or is it less about them and more about us? In this episode of Mongrel Nation, the debate that threatens to unravel the multicultural project. If you were to look at Australia from afar, you'd see this. A continent far away from war and conflict, a nation that shares no borders with any other nation, an island fortress with the ocean as its moat. Yet switch on the TV or tune into the radio, and you'd be mistaken for thinking that the place is under siege.
I want to see boats stopped.
Please be under no misunderstanding. The next Australian government will stop the boats.
You've got about 4 million people on the loose in Asia. The people want this resolved. There's no argument about it. They want it resolved.
By international standards, we receive a modest number of unauthorised arrivals. Over the past 10 years, Australia averaged around 3,000 asylum seekers arriving by boat per year, though during the past 5 years, we've averaged 6,000 per year. By comparison, 500,000 unauthorised immigrants get into the US each year. In Europe, the annual figure is estimated to be 800,000. The intensity of public debate is baffling at one level. After all, wasn't this a country that took in displaced persons from Europe at the end of the Second World War, that in the late 1970s took in refugees fleeing Southeast Asia? Maybe it's because our current circumstances are different from the past. The years following the Second World War were dedicated to the task of national reconstruction. As for boat people from the Vietnam War, there was perhaps a special responsibility given our military support for the South Vietnamese government. Former Prime Minister Malcolm Fraser.
We'd given undertakings to many Vietnamese. We had not been able to keep those undertakings because the South Vietnamese government fell and many people were going to be at risk. So we had, in my view, an ethical and moral obligation to make sure that if they could escape danger, we should do what we could to provide a home. And as a result of that, we have a vigorous, vital, productive Australian-Vietnamese community, which has added enormously to Australia. And these were people from a very different background, very different culture, hardworking and highly intelligent. Australia would be a much poorer place without that great, significant movement of people.
Australians mightn't feel the same sense of responsibility towards Afghans, Iraqis and Sri Lankans who today arrive on boats. But what formal responsibilities does Australia owe to asylum seekers? Australia is, of course, a signatory to the United Nations Refugee Convention. It has a legal obligation not to return someone to their country of origin if they are in well-founded fear of persecution. But for many in the asylum seeker debate, this obligation should never override the principle of national sovereignty.
Now you ask yourself, how many programs do you think should be determined in Australia to assist people in need, where those who want to benefit stand over you?
Philip Ruddock, who was Minister for Immigration from 1996 to 2003 during the Howard government.
There are people who say because you won't be returned to a situation of persecution by Australia if you have arrived here, that means you are entitled as of right to come. There is no such entitlement.
In fact, the Migration Act says that if you wish to come, you should have applied lawfully for a visa. I have not seen any unauthorised boat arrival apply for a visa.
There is another problem, according to Professor Mirko Bagaric, the Dean of Deakin University's Law School.
The largest refugee camp in the world is in Kenya. It's a camp called Dadaab. In that location, there are 460,000 people there. Some of those people are into their third familial generation. They've been there for more than 20 years. They're the most impoverished, destitute, sad people in the world. The people that arrive here by boat, they're also in need, but they're relatively affluent compared to the most destitute people that we do nothing about. The fact that people come here by boat indicates they've got mobility. Mobility equals money. These people pay at least $5,000 to $10,000 in order to come to Australia. They make a conscious, strategic decision to go halfway around the world to come to Australia. The people in Dadaab don't have that option. The reason they don't have that option is they've got no money, they've got no prospects, and they will continue to stay in the refugee camp for another three generations unless Australia gets an orderly, non-discriminatory refugee policy. Every person that comes here by boat takes the spot of a person that could potentially come from a place like Dadaab.
Tim Soppomisen with you on RN. You're listening to Mongrel Nation, the story of Australian multiculturalism. This week's episode, the debate about asylum seekers. Often questions about policy can overshadow the human dimension of refugees. For those fleeing persecution in their homelands, the journey to Australia can be long and difficult. Hugh Van Lee was one of the very first Vietnamese to arrive in Australia by boat in 1977. After escaping Vietnam, on the first leg of the journey, Mr. Lay's boat just made it to the coast of Malaysia.
Eventually, our boat, after 10 days, our boat gave in. It's leaking heavily. We run out of water, run out of food, and exhausted, and run out of answer or any solution. So as the boat started to sink, we swam to shore. Well, a few weeks later, we were sent to a remote island in Malaysia. But there were thousands and thousands of refugees already there. They hardly had enough food to eat or any medical cares. And, you know, the condition is so terrible, you're hardly able to leave. I was then asked by a group of people who'd been there for some time and had no chance of going anywhere. And we embarked on another journey to Australia. The journey took us nearly a month and so eventful, you know, apart from the monsoon downpour, which everybody on the boat was so desperate. We were preparing to die many times and confronting with the volcano in Lombok, the volcano that's still active. And eventually we come to the southern tip of Timor. The boat was quite wrecked, and we were waiting for good weather to make last leg of our journey to the northern coast of Australia. The crossing was estimated for about 3, 4, 5 days, and we were a bit concerned about the conditions, the seaworthiness of our boat. On the third day, I was in the wheelhouse of the boat, trying to steer the boat straight. And I saw one of the men standing on the deck of the boat, jumping up and down. He shouted out. I came out and I looked up into that beautiful, clear blue sky and a flock of white seagulls. And that image was so overwhelming to us because that means you are closer to land somewhere here because birds never venture too far away from land. But to me, those white seagulls were like angels leading our way to a promised land somewhere. I grabbed the binoculars and stared over the horizons, a very fragile, thin lines of silver. And I couldn't believe my eyes. They're just so beautiful. And that is still in my mind vividly for all these years. And that was a Darwin Harbour. We keep sailing slowly and we arrive at Melville Island when it was quite dark. So we stopped the boat, anchor off and have a little rest. We were very nervous. Of course, we did not know what kind of reception we would have in Australia. Our memory of the violent treatment that we had in Southeast Asia was still very fresh in our mind. Nevertheless, we prepare ourselves, say a little prayer, and then very early in the morning, about 4 o'clock, 4:30, we chuck-chuck clumsily into Darwin Harbour. It was so early in the morning, the fog still rising off the water. When we get a bit closer, we heard a buzzing noise of an outboard motor coming toward us. People braced ourselves and started to nervously look to see what kind of coast guards Australia have in receiving us. We waited and waited, and the noise getting bigger, and the little black dot becoming a tinny. We saw two blocks with shortened singlets standing on that little tinny with sun hats on, the nose with the white zings on the tip of them. And the first beers of the day were in their hands, and they come closer to us. They spotted us. And then one of them raised a stubby up and he shouted out, "G'day, mate. Welcome to Australia." And then they sped on for a fishing trip. We never seen them again. People in the boat asking me, "What did they say? What did they say?" And I said to them, they said, "Welcome."
These days, Hugh Van Leer is the Lieutenant Governor of South Australia and Chairman of the state's Multicultural and Ethnic Affairs Commission. Not every boat arrival gets the laconic, laid-back welcome that greeted Mr. Lay.
The case of the MV Tampa, the ship with a cargo of refugees off Christmas Island, has moved from international
SAS personnel to on the vessel crisis. Have put it to the captain that the appropriate thing would be for the captain to return to international waters.
Undoubtedly, this is the most popular decision as far as the Australian public are concerned the government's made during its reign.
Say enough's enough, you know. People coming down here believing they have rights. Start dictating and basically blackmailing the Australian people and saying, "Well, you have to take us because we said so."
I hope that amongst other things it sends a message to people smugglers and others around the world that whilst this is a humanitarian decent country, we are not a soft touch and we are not a nation whose sovereign rights in relation to who comes here are going to be trampled on.
The federal government is expected to reveal soon where the 180 asylum seekers on board HMAS Adelaide will be taken.
The Defence Minister Peter Reith has produced two separate photographs which show three adults and two children in the water.
There were children in the water. Now, we have a number of people, obviously RAN people, who were there, who reported that children were thrown into the water. Now, you may want to question the veracity of reports from the Royal Australian Navy. I don't.
The Foreign Affairs Minister, Alexander Dana, says he's appalled by what he calls standover tactics used by the asylum seekers.
They went and did their best to sabotage the boat. One can only assume they've now sunk their own boat. And people who behave like that through those standover tactics will not be rewarded by coming to this country. They will not be welcome in the mainland of Australia and they will not be integrated into our community. It's not going to happen.
A flashback to the Tampa and Children Overboard incidents of 2001. This is how Philip Ruddock now reflects on Tampa.
In my judgment, when people are rescued at sea, they should be grateful for the fact that they are rescued. And they should be taken to the most obvious and closest point where they can be safe. And the Tampa exercise was about people who were not prepared to be rescued and taken to the closest and most appropriate point in which they would be safe. And that was Merak in Indonesia. And they in fact stood over the captain, and people came to a view that it didn't matter what Australia might think, they were coming regardless. And all they had to do was put sufficient pressure upon us for us to succumb.
Not everyone would agree with this. Konkarapana Giotidis is the founder and CEO of the Asylum Seeker Resource Centre in Melbourne. According to him, The Tampa and Children Overboard incidents triggered a fundamental change in the way Australians talk about refugees.
The victims have become the villains and the oppressors have become the heroes in this debate. And asylum seekers, they're meant to be the thing of movies, of Hollywood movies, the Schindler's List of this world, where they are human rights heroes and somehow they are the villains in this.
One danger is that racially tinged hostility has also become more publicly acceptable.
This debate about asylum seekers doesn't just affect the few thousand that come on boats. It affects anyone of colour and of a different faith in this country. Talk to your Muslim friends, your Sikh friends, any of your friends that are Indian, Sri Lankan, African, and I'm sure every one of them has got, in the last year, go back to where you came from. Aboriginal people tell me they get to go back to where you came from as well. So we are not just demonising a small group, we are in fact demonising difference and diversity in this country.
The racial undertones of the debate also concern Mariam Veizadeh, a Canberra lawyer, Muslim community advocate, and refugee from Afghanistan.
If, you know, the boatloads of people that were arriving on our shores happened to be English backpackers, I mean, I know that would never happen, but just you know, for argument's sake, I think we would be welcoming them in a very different fashion. And I think that goes back to the whole, you know, Australians are familiar with Caucasian people, and so therefore that unknown factor is in there, that fear factor is in there, this assumption that culturally and, you know, in every other aspect that we're quite similar, so therefore, you know, let's welcome them with open arms. Surely they're not going to want to take over and, you know, do all of those things that I suppose some people think.
Of course, hostility toward boat arrivals isn't restricted to native-born Australians.
At the moment, there is a kind of complete paranoia about asylum seekers.
Social researcher Rebecca Huntley.
And this is the thing that's quite sobering when you do a lot of research with second and third generation migrants. We often find their attitudes to, for example, asylum seekers or their general attitudes to immigration are not dramatically different than the quote-unquote non-migrant population. A kind of view that we're being inundated by them, that their demands on the state are unreasonable. You know, the kind of concept of queue jumpers, the concept of illegals is very entrenched in people's minds.
For example, writer Alice Pung recounts her days at school in the western suburbs of Melbourne. Her parents were refugees from Cambodia.
Well, we're all minorities in high school because the school was just so diverse and most of us were refugees or of a refugee background, spanning from Bosnia to Vietnam to Cambodia, you know, Portugal, all sorts of places. And there were funny things that happened. So, for example, back when I was in year seven, a taller girl walked past me and my friend and she said, "Yous, go back where you come from. Go back on the boat," in this broken English. And she had brown hair and she looked quite tough. But my friend, who was also tough herself and feisty, ran after her and said, "What are you talking about? You came here 2 years ago from the Bosnian conflict, you know." So there was a shared affinity about where we came from. But we also knew there was a stigma of being firstly the newest arrival and secondly, coming on a boat.
This is Mongrel Nation, the story of Australian multiculturalism. I'm Tim Sutpomasan. Our subject in this episode, asylum seekers. There is something about coming on a boat that seems to transform the refugee issue. You wouldn't know it, but the number of people who seek asylum after arriving by plane far exceeds those who seek asylum after arriving by boat. But people smugglers, deaths at sea, and popular alarm are the ingredients for a potent political cocktail. Regular public hysteria means a fair, humane, and bipartisan refugee policy remains elusive. Last year, the Gillard government did try something new, appointing an expert panel headed by former Defence Force Chief Angus Houston to shape its policy. But that has been superseded by Prime Minister Kevin Rudd's move in July to introduce a new hardline policy.
Earlier today, I met the Prime Minister of Papua New Guinea and struck a new regional arrangement on asylum seekers. From this point forward, asylum seekers who arrive in Australia by boat will be sent to Papua New Guinea for processing and resettlement. People who come by boat now have no prospect of being resettled in Australia. The rules have changed. If you come by boat, you will never permanently live in Australia.
This policy shift has alarmed many who follow the refugee debate. Pastor Brad Chilcott is the CEO of Welcome to Australia, a community organisation that works with asylum seekers, refugees and other new arrivals to the country.
One thing that is missing in the debate is a recognition that it is very complex. We seem to try and bring it back down to an easy three-word slogan, stop the boats. And so the idea of success in the area of asylum seeker policy has been framed as if the boats stop, that is success. If you look at the global situation around asylum seekers and refugees, I don't think we can frame success in that way. And so I don't think I can give you like a handy policy answer that fixes the problem of asylum seekers. However, I do think that investing in more regional processing capabilities or capacity is a much better way of spending the billions of dollars that we're currently spending destroying people's mental health on offshore processing centres. So say a person had access to a well-funded processing regional centre in Malaysia, Indonesia, Pakistan would be a much better way of approaching finding a pathway to resettlement than getting on a boat, and maybe a redirection of funding in that direction rather than the punitive measures we currently spend billions on is one direction forward.
For Con Karapanagiotidis, there remains the task of ensuring that asylum seekers can settle and in time participate in Australian society.
The 12 years of working with asylum seekers has shown me that it's an extremely traumatic experience for asylum seekers. You know, the experience of displacement in of itself is inherently traumatic. The loss of family, the loss of community, of culture, of connection has profound harm, and people carry great grief. Then that is further exacerbated and compounded by three critical factors. One is indefinite detention, where people often come out quite institutionalized and damaged. Two is a limbo, whether it's in detention or in the community, and that uncertainty erodes hope, well-being, mental health, and the ability to exist in a functional and successful way. And third is destitution. An example being the recent denial of the right to work to asylum seekers who have arrived by boat since the 13th of August of 2012. Exclusion from the economy creates an underclass of destitute people that are forced to disintegrate.
Often, however, it's not how to integrate refugees that is most contentious. Rather, it's the matter of which refugees we should take in. Mirko Bagaric believes that the current situation warrants Australian governments taking drastic measures.
What I'm saying is that we shouldn't allow any people that come here by boat or plane and have got the temerity to push their way to get an accelerated treatment of their refugee determination in preference to the people that are having to wait away in refugee camps and allow their hopes to fade. What I do know is that on the basis of previous experience, if people around the world in desperate situations know that Australia does not provide refugee visas to people that come here without a pre-existing refugee determination, they won't come.
That's certainly the thinking behind the so-called Papua New Guinea solution announced by Kevin Rudd in July.
If we were able to take 40 million people, we could solve the world's refugee problem. But I suspect we could take the 40 million people and there would still be people who say, oh, look, you haven't taken me. I'm a claimant as well. take the 40 million and we'd still be dealing with unauthorised boat arrivals if you took a lax view in relation to how you deal with those issues.
Philip Ruddock is right about one thing. Australia can't take in every refugee in the world. But arguably, such statements can send a dangerous political signal as well. They can encourage people to think that when it concerns refugees, nations have to be cruel to be kind. Sometimes it helps to be reminded that Australia has in the past been both open and generous. Hugh Van Ley on his experience in the 1970s as a refugee settling in Adelaide.
Well, we arrive in Pennington Hostel and I notice a lot of graffitis around our neighbourhoods with the words Asian out everywhere. But at the same time, there were big groups of people who visited us in the hostel, bringing with them books, second-hand clothings, and furnitures, a fan or, you know, black and white television, that sort of thing, and chat with us, and eventually took us out to their home and take us around to the cities as well. So the reception was quite mixed. But overwhelmingly, I think the Australians were very friendly. They genuinely curious about who we were, what we believe in, why we come here.
What I think Australia is often really missing in this debate is a recognition of the privilege that it is to be a part of giving someone else a better life.
Pastor Brad Chilcott.
To welcome someone who has suffered so much and say, here is a place you can be safe. Here is a place where you don't have to worry about bombs going off in your street. Here is a place that your children can go to school and be educated and grow up, hoping that one day they might be free to be employed and have a family of their own. There is great privilege in that. And if anything, my faith has taught me the privilege of being involved in helping people have a better life than the one they have today.
In the 20th century, Australia welcomed refugees from Europe, Asia, and elsewhere. These refugees, people like Hugh Van Ley, went on to become proud citizens, making an enduring contribution to this country. Yet many of us are now apprehensive about outsiders seeking sanctuary on our shores. The reasons are complex, the debate polarising. But the intense political conflict over this issue does little to help harmony in a multicultural nation. In one essential respect, the question of asylum seekers is one of national sovereignty. Only too often, it's about the sovereignty of fear. I'm Tim Soponosan. Mongrel Nation is produced by Amanda Smith, and you can stream or download this episode from the RN website. Just scroll down the program list. Next week, the final episode in this series. Is it Australia's destiny to be a mongrel nation in the Asian century?